Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons.
Pill was approved in 1960, and the next thing you know, you have sex and the single girl and the summer of love and make love not war and this great sexual revolution. And so there was this sort of assumption of cause and effect that because of the availability of the pill, there was this sudden change in sexual behavior among women. And what that misses is the fact that for those 10 years of the 1960s when all that was happening, the pill was really only available for birth control for married women. Even Planned Parenthood clinics would not give it to unmarried women unless, you know, they borrowed an engagement ring and pretended that they were getting married. And so the idea that somehow it was the reason why all of this change in sexual morality occurred in the 1960s just doesn't hold up.
That's Nancy Gibbs, author of a cover story for Time magazine about the 50th anniversary of the birth control pill. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Has it been the source of all good? Has it been a net good for society, the birth control pill? Everyone agrees it changed a lot. Has it changed society and us for the better or for the worse? It's a question we should be asking on the 50th anniversary of the introduction of the birth control pill. We're going to be talking about that with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse in the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. After our conversation with Dr. Morse, we'll be joined by Pastor Charles Lehman, and we'll review the movie Clash of the Titans. Then we'll wrap up today's program, playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's Friday afternoon, April the 30th. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us with questions or comments at @issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books, Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What do you make of Nancy Gibbs of Time magazine's assertion that the birth control pill didn't cause or contribute to the sexual revolution in the 60s because only married women had access to it at first?
Well, I don't know how many misleading statements you can put into one statement like that. I mean, first of all, no real revolutions happen in the sense that you snap your fingers and then the next minute it's all different. It didn't cause the sexual revolution in the 60s, but it sure did cause the sexual revolution overall. And the thing that she's overlooking there is that the real watershed event is not so much the introduction of the pill itself or its availability. The watershed event was really Griswold versus Connecticut, which took place in 1965, as she certainly knows. And what Griswold versus Connecticut did was it did two things. As a legal finding, it found that there was a right to privacy inside the marriage, which is to say that a married couple had the right to have information about contraception and access to contraception, because to not let them have that right would be to somehow invade the sanctity of the marital bedroom, and that was thought to be improper. And so as a legal matter, Griswold versus Connecticut made it impossible for states to regulate either the use of the birth control pill or the information about the birth control pill, at least for married couples. And so that's the legal matter. As a practical matter, what Griswold did is it made possible the existence of the freestanding birth control clinic. Because up until that time, she's right about one thing, up until that time, women could obtain the birth control pill through their doctors. And typically, you know, you have your doctor who knows you, and you go to your doctor when you're engaged to find out about the birth control pill. That was kind of the social norm at that time. But what Griswold did was made it possible for birth control pills to be delivered to the public without going through a physician, particularly. And so those two things really kind of set the ball in motion that paved the way for much more widespread use of contraception, but also the broader and more significant social changes which were coming very early into the 1970s.
if you read the Time magazine piece, you might get the impression, I think you've written about this recently, that there's really only upside to 50 years of the birth control pill. What, if anything, is the downside?
Well, I'll tell you something. Over at the Ruth Institute blog, which we just call ruthblog.org, I'm starting to collect together articles that I've written, articles that other people have written, that deal with some of the downside of contraception. And there are a number of downsides to contraception. And so we're just kind of collecting them there. And if your listeners want to go there, I'm adding to it periodically. There's just a couple of things up there now, but I'm adding to it. I'll be adding over the next week or so. I'll be putting up a bunch more. I mean, the first thing to say about the negative consequence of contraception is that contraception by itself didn't do what its proponents said it would do. What people claimed it would do is to make it possible to have sex without having babies. And of course, that isn't true. What all contraception does, every single method of contraception, any of the so-called reversible methods of contraception, they just reduce the probability of pregnancy. They don't reduce the probability all the way to zero, you know. So that means you're going to have some contraceptive failure sometime. And if you've been having sex in an environment and in a situation and in a context that can't support a pregnancy, well, that means, whoops, we got a problem here now. Now we're pregnant, and gee, I don't really want a shotgun marriage with this creep that I sort of picked out, never actually didn't think too much about before I started having sex with him. So now the pressure to have abortion on demand as a legal right, that pressure becomes very strong. And the legal sequence, as I mentioned, Griswold versus Connecticut in 65, in 1972, you have Eisenstadt versus Baird, and what Eisenstadt did was to say that the right to contraception is not just for the married couple. The right to contraception is for single people as well, and that's what really let the cat out of the bag and made it impossible for anybody to really regulate access to contraception. That's when single people could use it. You couldn't say no to anybody, really, and so therefore you really need access to abortion as the backup plan. And less than a year later, of course, we've got Roe versus Wade. So there's a very strong connection between contraception and abortion, but it's not the connection people usually think. Usually people think, oh gosh, if we want to reduce abortion, we need to give more and more and more contraception. And that turns out to be exactly wrong. And that's what's really surprising to people.
As an economist, has the birth control been good for the state of the economy over the last 50 years?
Well, now that's a very interesting question, because what the birth control pill has done is made it possible for women to participate in the labor force during their peak childbearing years, because you can invest in yourself and get a job and get higher education and stuff without worrying about whether you're going to get pregnant or not. And what has happened is very quickly it became the social norm that women were expected to work pretty much straight through their childbearing years. And if you have a baby, it's your problem to deal with the baby. If you picture a graduate student in 1950, if a woman graduate student got pregnant in 1950, she was expected to quit school and get married and have the baby. Of course, she would have been married in any case, in most cases in 1950. But today, if a woman graduate student gets pregnant, she's expected to get rid of the baby. It's no easier today to be a woman in graduate school with a brand new baby than it was in 1950. In most respects, you're just expected. You have the option of aborting the fetus, and so that's supposed to be a good thing. So what's happened is that the effort and energy of women that used to be put into the home, into the rearing of children and having of children, that effort is now being put into the labor market. And so if you're measuring GNP, it looks like, oh, gosh, we've got a lot more GNP because these women are all out getting paid a salary to do stuff. But the work that used to be getting done at home isn't getting done anymore. And so it looks good on paper in a certain way, but there are a lot of pathologies and costs that are not being taken account of when you look at it like that.
Well, and if you connect the birth control, not necessarily morally, but at least legally and philosophically, with abortion on demand, then you're talking about a much smaller workforce than there would have been in the last 50 years, aren't we?
No question about that. No question about that. I mean, by one estimate, the Social Security deficit that we're facing wouldn't exist if we hadn't had abortion on demand. You know, I mean, I've seen people come up with that number. So that's a huge bit of short-sightedness that we're only now beginning to confront. The fact that we are counting people's contribution to the future when they're working, but we're not counting their contribution to the future when they're creating future taxpayers. And so there are many of our social systems that have been skewed by that particular oversight. There's no doubt about that, Todd.
Jen, with about a little bit less than a minute, your final thoughts on the 50th anniversary of the birth control pill?
Well, I honestly think that the birth control pill has been one of the biggest frauds ever perpetrated on modern civilization, because it has promised far more than it was ever capable of delivering. I mean, who can possibly believe that the birth control pill has made every child a wanted child? I mean, there's more child abuse. There are more children born to single mothers. There are more problem situations for children today than there ever have been in the past. And what has happened with the birth control pill is it has shifted the burden of taking care of children onto women, because the woman, everything about this is now the woman's choice, and she's empowered. But it also becomes her problem. When it's her choice, it becomes her problem. And so the social norms that forced men to step up to the plate and meet their responsibilities as fathers, those norms disappeared very, very quickly. And the birth control pill is a big part of why that happened.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Check out her blog and website tonight, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for Jennifer Roback-Morse and the Ruth Institute. Jen, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we'll spend some time with Pastor Charles Lehman reviewing the movie Clash of the Titans. It's about the gods and whether or not men need them anymore. Interested to see what Pastor Lehman will have to say about that. Then, Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons.
Do you find the book of Revelation to be discomforting, discouraging, and downright difficult? Well, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a lay-friendly commentary on Revelation. It's titled Concordia Popular Commentary, Revelation. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Concordia Popular Commentary, Revelation by Dr. Lewis Brighton. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.